Welcome back to the Smoke and Steak podcast. This is episode 88 of the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. I'm your host, Peter, joined as always by your other host, Enric. And we've got a lot to cover. We've been off the airwaves once again for probably, I think, almost 15 days. There's been a lot of action going on in the state tournaments. We're getting to some finals. We had the Libertadores draw. But most importantly, for a lot of the viewers of the Brazilian national team and enjoyers of Brazilian football in general, the national team was back. They had friendlies against England and Spain. And I think we really witnessed the birth on a much larger scale of a future icon of Brazil, Endrick, of course. So with all that being said, we have that to cover, plus a lot more in the details. As we bring in Enric here. Enric, let's start with the international friendlies. Just nothing on the line here, but two pretty big fixtures against huge clubs, both World Cup champions in England and in Spain. What did you think about these fixtures and how the matches eventually played out?
Hey, Peter, I thought that these were pretty good matchups for the fact that Brazil has been playing some weak sides recently, whether it was other friendlies like last year when we versed Morocco or the Copa America or the World Cup qualification matches against teams like Bolivia, Peru. So for the first time in a while, we got to play against big guns like how we versed Croatia in the World Cup. England and Spain, two European giants. And honestly, going into these games, I wasn't too optimistic. I thought that the Brazil team would not be picking up any win. Maybe a draw in both matches would be good. But even a marginal loss to, for example, England, I thought that would have been okay too. But it turns out that the team performed more than we expected, which is good. So hopefully we get to see that more often in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And that England game, I was pretty pessimistic about. I think I was, I don't know if I said it on Twitter or on the pod, but I thought they were going to lose. But not so. They actually pull away from the Wembley Stadium with a 1-0 win, courtesy of that man that we already, I said man, he's a 17-year-old kid. Endriki comes on in the 71st minute, scores in the 80th. Just a poacher's goal, his first for the professional team, and what a place to do it, what a way to do it. So exciting. Brazil also played at the Bernabeu in Spain, 3-3 draw, much more much more interesting game, I would say, versus Spain. But again, Endriki on the score sheet, coming in on the 46th minute at halftime there. And scoring just 4 minutes later at the 50th. Just incredible, incredible stuff.
Yeah, and what's even crazier is the fact that both of these teams that we played, international friendlies, are meant to be played in a neutral stadium, but it happened and both games were played in against England in England and against Spain in Spain. So to think that Brazil was able to get, let's say, 4 points out of these two matches is insane. And yeah, the Spain match, I wasn't too optimistic there either because Spain had originally lost 1-0 against Colombia. So I thought now they're going to take revenge against Brazil, which seemed to be the case. They went up twice in advantage, first by two goals after they scored them in the first half. Brazil, thankfully, was able to equalize. And then Rodri had that penalty kick. And Lucas Paquetá, also with a penalty, was able to equalize. So it was very impressive to see the national team play the way they played again without Neymar. So again, hopefully we can find the right substitute for him and be ready for that Copa America that's coming up soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Paquetá was great as kind of the attacking midfielder, but credit to Spain as well. They looked pretty good. That Dani Olmo goal was sick. I don't know if you saw that, or if you remember that. It was kind of quite a while ago now, actually, as we record this on Easter Monday. Happy Easter, everyone. Yeah, great win, last minute win. Wanted to ask you, as we wrap this up, what do you think we can take? I mean, obviously, these are friendly games, not too much on the line, but again, historic matchups. What can we take away from these matches? And maybe even if you even care to discuss it, I know there was a bit of VAR or VAR controversy, especially in the Spain game. Do you think we can take a lot out of this and be optimistic about the Seleção?
Yeah, we can definitely be optimistic. And the VAR action, I don't think that's not going to cause too much issue because I really thought that Lucas Beraldo or whoever fouled Lamine Yamal, it was actually a penalty. I know it was a very small touch, but the penalty was awarded deservedly. So I'm feeling very optimistic about Brazil, the new coach, Dorival Jr. It seems like we're going to be in right hands. And not saying that Fernando Diniz wasn't, but he had to focus in both club and national team level. And Brazil is like the hardest country to manage, probably. No wonder we have five World Cups and let alone coaching a club at the same time. So we're on the right path. Without Neymar, it's going to be difficult, but I feel like the team's going to manage to pull things well and play and get results in Copa America. And I think we can win Copa America. I know Argentina is a tough rival, but most of the players there, Messi, for example, maybe he won't be playing every game. It seems like he's getting injured nowadays. So, yeah, I feel good about Brazil.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm a little less optimistic, but I honestly I was blown away by these two matches. And really props to all the kids that showed up, and also some of the veterans, Fabrício Bruno, the central defender from Flamengo, slotting in just perfectly and playing really, really well against a very young or with a very young Beraldo, who's just getting adjusted to European football. So again, the quality coming from the Brasileirão is really at a high point in recent years. All right, so let's shift the focus back to Brazil, the Paulista. We usually start with that. I think we'll do that again. We have the final. We just had the first leg played yesterday on Easter Sunday, and Santos hosted Palmeiras. Let's take a quick look at how they got here. Santos just squeezing by Portuguesa, and then a very convincing 3-1 win over Bragantino. Palmeiras thumped Ponte Preta, and they got by Novo Horizontino by a very slim margin, indeed the slimmest margin possible, 1-0. And that's how they found themselves in the final. Enric, I'll just kind of give that to you. I don't know if you want to comment on the path that each team took. I think Palmeiras was very straightforward, but Santos definitely had a lot of work to do, especially against Red Bull Braga. They had that game at the Stadium of Corinthians, and huge, huge turnout, the biggest turnout actually at that stadium all year long. And it was for a Santos game. Pedrinho was balling, Juliano was balling. Guilherme, of course, was balling. So a lot to talk about there. Maybe comment on the path that Santos had to take, and then maybe kind of roll that into the final.
The path was actually fun, not for Santos. The way we started wasn't too convincing, and both me and you were probably afraid going into those penalty kicks against Portuguesa, and I don't even know how we got there because we should have gotten the job done in the first or second half. And then Otero was expelled with a red card, which was even scarier to play for 15 or more minutes without a man. So thankfully, João Paulo saved a couple penalties, a couple went wide, and we made it into the semifinals. And one of the things that I was happy about to win against Portuguesa and penalties is that we went into that semifinal as an underdog. People viewed us as a team that are struggling in a knockout stages, like Rebel Bragantino. They convincingly beat Inter de Limeira 3-0. And the same thing for Palmeiras. They beat Ponte Preta 5-1. So both Palmeiras and Rebel Bragantino were probably thinking, okay, now we're going to beat our respective opponents and reach the final. So Santos, again, as you mentioned, playing in Corinthians Stadium, it was actually fun to watch. We had not won against Rebel Bragantino in any competition since 2021, I believe. In the last two Paulistas, they were in a group as us, and we never managed to get out of them. In Serie A, we lost both matches last year, so it's been quite a while since we got to see the team perform the way they did. I mentioned the last time we did a podcast that I would like to see the former Santos player that plays for Portuguesa now to score. And he didn't score. The one who scored was Eduardo Sacha, the man who also got the goal a couple months ago in Vila Belmiro. He scored again, but thankfully our team had already scored three, gotten the job done. So again, it was very nice to see the team perform the way they did and reach the final stages of Paulista, which hasn't happened since 2016.
Yeah, it was really one of the biggest games in the last 2 years, certainly in the last 2 years, I should say. And man, the crowd was electric. It was a great environment. And yeah, huge game from Pedrinho, two assists, Guilherme, a goal and assist. So that was awesome to see. And then it set the stage for a great matchup between Santos and Palmeiras. It was so great to see that crowd in Sao Paulo, the money the team makes. And they tried to keep it in Sao Paulo for the final, the home leg of the final at the Itaquera, the Corinthians Stadium, or Morumbi, the Sao Paulo Stadium. But both teams declined to let Santos use their stadiums. And it ended up being in Vila Belmiro, which was fine with me. A lot less money, but man, that place was rocking yesterday. And they really had another great game against, especially the first half, Palmeiras. Santos taking home the victory 1-0 over Palmeiras in the first leg. What did you think of the trophy presentation? You had Neymar flying in. Apparently he got the call from the club president when he was in Miami, took a plane right to Sao Paulo, took a helicopter to Santos and was there only an hour before kickoff. He presented the trophy along. I think it was Coutinho and another Santos legend. It was awesome. What'd you think of Neymar? And maybe after that we talk about the game, we'll talk about his comments.
Yeah, it was just spectacular to see Neymar, one of the icons of the club, coming to Vila Belmiro, I believe, for the third time. His first was when we played Audax Italiano in Sudamericana last year. The second one was in the Paulista.
Yeah, Corinthians.
Corinthians, yeah. That was a beautiful match that we also won. And then now we got to win again 1-0 against Palmeiras at home. Beautiful match, and hopefully Neymar not only helps Santos lift that trophy in a week, but hopefully he's going to be able to lift it up again in 2 years when he supposedly comes back to the club, which is the dream for all of us. So it was just beautiful seeing him happy. Some people were saying that maybe he likes Palmeiras a little bit because his wife, or the mom of the second child, is a Palmeirense. At least he expressed all the emotions in the stands alongside his dad, how happy he was when Otero got the header in. So it was just beautiful to see. And hopefully, I know it's going to be difficult, but hopefully we get to hold Palmeiras in Allianz Park next week, maybe on a draw, and we'll lift the trophy for the first time in 8 years. Been a long time.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, since that 2016 final. But yeah, you said Otero got the goal. Guilherme, of course, the assist, great assist there, great move prior to that. Santos looking great in the first half. Palmeiras would respond, but João Paulo standing tall, eight saves, equal to Everton, four from inside the box, one of the highest rated players of the game. Really impressive stuff. And And great to see a 1-0 win, although definitely will be very nervous in the Allianz Parque next weekend. It's going to be a huge final, just the one goal. So it's going to be scary. And you can see what Palmeiras does to teams, especially to Santos in recent finals, both in Copinha and Libertadores. So I'm definitely nervous, but hey, this team looks as good as it's looked in the past few years. And it's really exciting that they're back at this stage, facing a Palmeiras team that maybe is a little bit worn down. All played a lot of football recently. Oh, also, let's just touch briefly before we move on to Rio. Endriquez scored two goals on the international break, comes back, scores the goal versus Novorizontino. And this kid, all he does is take iconic photos. He picked up the Palmeiras logo from the grass, draped it over himself. A bunch of great photos coming out like that. Add them to the album already. Put them in your scrapbook, because this kid, we're truly entering the Endriki era. Someone had a great tweet where, this was the weekend where Endriki not just became the future, but he became the present.
And I think one of the things that makes him even more iconic, not only his physicality, he looks like he's like 25, 30 years old with his muscles in all over his body, but the way how he tucks his shirt in, like you would see a picture of Pelé 50 years ago. And
Yes.
then I don't know if you realize the collar, he actually turns the collar the opposite side, similar of how Neymar used to do when he used to wear that Santos blue shirt in 2012 or 2013. So just iconic. Thankfully, after him scoring in three consecutive games, international level, and for Palmeiras, I'm happy that he didn't do it against Santos. He tried, but wasn't too lucky until he came off. And then I don't know if you remember this during the match, Ronnie had like a crazy shot from the middle. And I was just thinking, Peter's probably tweeting about me.
You know what? I was with my family enjoying Easter, so I didn't even get to. I was kind of keeping tabs on my phone and refreshing Fujimax, so I didn't see it live. But I did when I was watching the highlights and the replays. I did think of you, and he actually had, I think, two or three chances, but he skied that one. I think that was his best chance by far. So yeah, next leg, next weekend, and it should be a good one. All right, Enric, let's move on to Campeonato Carioca. We are in the midst of the final in Rio as well. Flamengo hosting Novo Iguaçu, and the return leg. Nova dropped the first leg 3-0. Both teams making it to the final. Flamengo getting past Fluminense, Nova beating Vasco on aggregate 2-1. Very surprising game there. Big time assist and goal. Well, Carlinhos provided the assist and Bill provided the goal against Vasco to give them the win and progress them to the final. We've talked about those two players before and they kind of reverse roles. Carlinhos normally the goal scorer and Bill usually pulling the strings, but again, we've said it before, those two players looking to probably move on and play at a much higher level. But in the final, the first leg, it was all Flamengo.
Yeah, and then another fact that I like to mention is that Flamengo still has only conceded one goal throughout the Carioca competition. That goal they conceded against Nova Iguaçu, so it stays like that. Now they don't concede, which is crazy to hear. And if you're wondering how they made it into the final, they had to beat Vasco, as you mentioned, Peter. And I was very happy with that result, seeing Vasco da Gama not make it to the Carioca finals. Not that they would beat Flamengo, but you know what? Less games for them. They deserve to play in Serie B, not us. So very happy to see them go down the way they did. And Nova Iguaçu, I think they're gonna have a hard time next week when they play in the return leg in Maracanã. Maybe it's gonna be another 3-0 or even worse, like 4-5-0 for Flamengo. And Flamengo will be more than happy to take a trophy, just like Botafogo did recently. They were able to smash Boavista in the final by winning against them 4-0 away and 2-0 at home yesterday. Chiquinho Soares finally coming back in the score sheet. For the first time in a long time, Junior Santos hasn't scored a goal, which probably needed to get some rest after everything he has been doing in the Libertadores. So it's been a good Carioca Championships. Flamengo on the verge of winning it. Botafogo doing what they did last year. So overall, the state championships for Paulista and Carioca have gone through things that maybe not too many people expected, especially when it comes to Paulista.
Yeah, definitely. And Botafogo in that Taça Rio, kind of the consolation trophy or the loser's trophy, as they'll probably be thinking of it. They want to be competing for that top trophy, that Campeonato Carioca trophy. But another bright point, two more bright points actually for Botafogo in that second leg. Luis Henrique is back from an injury and had a great game. And also, remember our buddy Patrick de Paula is back from injury after 400 days, more than a year injured. He is finally back, highly touted central midfielder, came to Botafogo from Palmeiras and just hasn't really made an impact due to injury and a number of other things. Great to see him back, and who knows, he might be the boost they need. Botafogo getting inching closer to a permanent manager as well. So things are falling in line for their season, but I think they'll be a little bit disappointed, even though they do go home with the trophy. Moving on to the Campeonato Gaúcho, kind of a surprising final setup here: Juventude and Gremio playing after Juve knocked Internacional out on penalties in the semifinal. Grêmio taking care of Caxias do Sul. Diego Costa balling, scoring some goals, stat padding, as they say. But Grêmio should be expected to win that second leg at home. You have any thoughts on the Gaúcho Championship, Henrik?
Yeah, I was just very surprised to see Inter go out. They tied 0-0 in the first leg away from home, and then they tied 1-1 at home, then lost in penalty kicks. Maybe you would consider the red card that Mauricio received as a downside for the home team, the fact that they managed to go to pens and then lose. But the same thing happened to Gremio. They had already won 2-1 in the first leg against Caxias, and then saw themselves with a 3-0 lead in the first time at home until Mike, you received the red card, and Caxias do Sul scored two in that second half. If they managed to score two more, they would have gone to penalty kicks. But looking at that final, I know Juventude just tied 0-0 at home, but look at the match that they played Inter in the semis. The same exact thing happened. So I wouldn't be surprised if Juventude comes up as the winner of this trophy. Maybe Gremio will underestimate them. They'll look at Juventude as a team that just got promoted from Serie B, and maybe they would think it's going to be an easy walk by them. But hopefully, we get to see more surprises because, of course, we would have loved to see a Grenal Derby. But since Internacional didn't make it, you know what? I'll cheer for Juventude in the final, and hopefully them alongside Nene, who is confirmed to stay in the club. He didn't go into another Serie B club, so hopefully he gets to lift the trophy at the end of the week.
You know what? I'm with you. I would love to see Juventude hoist that trophy, and not just a less special Gremio hoist it again. All right, moving on fast. We've got a lot more to cover, but let's take a moment here and talk about the Campeonato Mineiro, because the final is, of course, the eternal rivalry of Belo Horizonte, Atlético Mineiro versus Cruzeiro. And we had a hell of a first game. Cruzeiro beating Tombense and Atletico beating America to get to the final. And it was all set up. Of course, I don't know. Actually, we haven't talked about it. Filipão got the sack from Atletico Mineiro. And they bring in Gabriel Milito, who you might know as the manager of Argentinos Juniors. They played very well against Corinthians last year. They are kind of a outside dark horse team on an annual basis, either in Sudamericana or Libertadores, and they seem to do pretty well against Brazilian teams. So I'll be interested to see how Milito gets on. But one of the big talking points of prior to the game was Gustavo Scarpa cut out of the starting lineup. And one of the probably technically most skilled players in the league, and one of the best players in the last couple of years, cut out of that lineup. He hadn't been really contributing as much as they would have hoped. You look at some of the other big signings, really making a big impact. Scarpa hasn't really. And for that reason, Milito put him on the bench. But regardless, it ended up being a crazy game, 2-2. Enric, did you get a chance to look at this match or take a look back at it after it happened?
I was getting notifications on my phone, didn't have time to watch it live, and I saw Atletico scored first and early in the 8th minute, and I thought, okay, it's going to be an easy game. Then they scored a second. And I don't know if you saw this, but on Twitter for a specific time, as soon as that first goal went in, Atletico Mineiro's Twitter page tweeted like, ha 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 ha. And I think at the end of the game, they deleted that because, of course, it was a great result for them. The team or Cruzeiro managed to do the impossible, come back, score 2-2. And as they have done recently, they managed to not beat Atletico Mineiro because they didn't beat them now, but get some great results against this team, whether they're playing at home or away. So I wouldn't be surprised if Cruzeiro will be the winners of the Mineiro championship at the end of the month.
Yeah, great performance from Cruzeiro. But we got to go back to that first goal. You skipped on by it. Not unlike Bruno Fuchs, who skipped by, I don't know, two or three defenders, including a nutmeg. Keep in mind, everyone, this is a center back. We talk about scoring center backs in the Brasileirão, Gustavo Gomes, players like that. But Bruno Fuchs looked like prime Neymar cutting through the Cruzeiro defense. It's an incredible goal. Go check it out. And even his body, I mean, he's such a built bigger, taller guy. He's not like a nimble winner or winger. It's just so ridiculous that he is a center back. I mean, of course, these players are all at a high level, but can do something like that. And it's a wonderful goal. Hulk, of course, gets his obligatory goal, and they almost, I think, might have killed the game and killed the final with Paulinho cutting in on a great attack, but Rafael Cabral made the save for Cruzeiro, and that set them up. They got a bit of luck. Jamerson had a bad own goal, and then in the final minutes, after a missed penalty shout, I want to say Matheus Pereira got hauled down, and they didn't give the pen, but a last minute cross by João Marcelo to Juan Dineno, the new striker from the Mexican League, coming into Cruzeiro, and he heads it in 2-2, the 90th plus five. Such an exciting finish. And I'm kind of with you. I think Cruzeiro's got a lot of momentum. I think Palmeiras are adjusting to a new coach. They've got strife in the locker room. Cruzeiro are going to be on their home turf. And I think they're going to be feeling good, and I think they might snatch this trophy away from Gallo.
Yeah, I think so too. And looking at how Cruzeiro has been playing, even in the semifinals or quarterfinals, when they versed Tombense, they tied 0-0 in that first leg. And then they killed, smashed Tombense 3-1 at home. So I would expect the same thing. Although this is a huge rivalry and two massive clubs, maybe Cruzeiro will pull it through and manage to lift the trophy at the end. And now we talked about the main state championships. Let's take a moment and also talk about the other championships, maybe not small, but not as big as the other four that we've been talking about, starting with Campeonato Paranaense, where Maringá has managed to reach the final and play against Atlético Paranaense. Maringá was able to beat Coritiba after winning 2-0 in that first leg at home and then tying 0-0 away. Surprising. This team made it into the final, and the same thing did Atlético Paranaense against Operário. I mean, Atlético Paranaense, probably the winner of this championship, as they did against Maringá, winning 1-0 with a goal scored by Pablo away from home. I would be imagining that Atlético will probably win 3-4, even 5-0 at home, despite them having that goal already scored. So do you think this is going to have a different winner, Peter, or is it going to be Atlético Paranaense in your opinion?
No, I think Atlético Paranaense have this wrapped up. I think that goal was just a cherry on top. They'll love to take that league, but I think they'll go back to their stadium, Arena Baixada, and I think they will they'll probably hammer Maringá 3-0, 3-1, something like that. In other state championships, we had the Santa Catarina championship. Chris Yuma in the final. No Yannick Bolasie sighting yet, but we're relishing that moment when he finally steps onto the pitch for Chris Yuma. Fortaleza and Ceará playing 0-0 in the first leg. In Goiânia, Villanova and Atlético Goianiense, and then another huge derby in Bahia, Vitória actually taking home a win 3-2 over Bahia. Bahia steamrolling a lot of teams this year, but Vitória get the better of them. Second leg, of course, next weekend, so a lot of trophies being handed out next weekend. Sport Recife, Lee Narchico, go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you talked about Vitória Bahia, I'm not sure if you watched this, but Bahia actually scored 2 goals, one in each half, and they were winning 2-0 until the 68th minute when Vitória decided to turn things around. They scored 3 goals within 22 minutes. So it was just impressive to see, and I would love to see Vitória lift that trophy. As I hate Vasco da Gama, I also hate Bahia. Hopefully, they'll not be able to win the Campeonato Baiano. And then, as you mentioned, Campeonato Pernambucano, Sport Recife beating Náutico 2-0. Second leg will be played on Saturday. In Campeonato Amazonense, probably the team that we know the most currently in Serie B, Amazonas, they were eliminated in the quarterfinals today, so they won't be even able to reach that final of their own state championship. In Campeonato Brasiliense was eliminated in the semis. They lost 6-3 on aggregate versus Capital. At some point between the Brasiliense and Copa Verde, they played in back-to-back days, so they had to play Cuiabá and Copa Verde with their B team. So maybe that's one of the factors of the team being negatively impacted by CBF having to play the cup, where they even had Criciúma, then Brasiliense, and then Copa Verde, so much at the same time for a four division club, which I don't really agree with. In Campeonato, I believe, Paraense, we got to see Remo, or we will see Remo Paysandú, huge rivalry, and probably the two biggest teams in the state, finally reached the final. So they'll be playing that first leg on Saturday. And then we can also talk about the Paulista second division teams. Portuguesa Santista tied 0-0 against Noroeste, and the winner of this on Sunday will be playing in the first division next year. I would love to see Portuguesa Santista make it through, because that's the team where Neymar originally started playing football before he joined Santos. And Juventus lost 1-0 against Velo Clube. I'm not sure if you remember, Peter, but when we interviewed our friend Thomas Freitas, he actually talked about a funny story with Velo Clube about the player who runs fast. And for people who don't know what I'm talking about, maybe should manage to go back and watch or listen to the episode we had with him. So one of those two teams once again will probably make it to the Paulista first state championship next year. So it's definitely going to be a good year and a year with so many teams that we know and we watch in a daily basis.
Yeah, definitely go listen back to that Thomas Freitas interview. We talked to him for a while, but man, it was all great, great stuff. And we got to have him back on here soon. In other competitions, Copa Nordeste, wrapping up the group stage, some big games going on in the quarterfinal, or some big teams in that region. Copa Vergi as well, progressing to the semifinals. Cuiabá, I think probably the biggest team left in it. Enric, we kind of buried the lead here. We had Copa Libertadores draws in the meantime here, and we've got the games happening today, Tuesday, April 2nd, the first round of group stage games going on. We have Libertadores and Sudamericana, so the groups are established. The fixtures are set, and another year, all these teams are going to be hunting for the eternal glory of the Copa Libertadores. We won't go through each and every group, but there are some, I think, standout groups. Enric, I don't know about you, but I've got my eye on Group B, São Paulo, Barcelona from Ecuador, Táchira from Argentina. All three of those teams, I think, can be pretty difficult. Cobresal as well from Chile. I don't know much about them, if anything, and I don't think they'll be very powerful. But anything that catches your eye here in the groups, or indeed in the first round of fixtures?
Well, when the draw was taking place, I was actually live with our friend Bolivar News, actually reacting at the same time. So maybe some of the things I'll be saying will be similar. But overall, I'm very happy that we get to see a Brazilian team in a different group. It's not like we saw last year Atlético Paranaense and Atlético Mineiro play in the same group with each other. It was good to see them both advance, but most of the time when two Brazilian teams are together, there's the third team that manages to make it in the next stage ahead of one of those Brazilian teams. So I'm glad to see a Brazilian in separate groups. If Red Bull Bragantino would have managed to be on a different match other than playing Botafogo, maybe they would have been in Libertadores and maybe they would have been in Group H, which would be the best thing to see as a neutral watching Brasileirão. But you got your eye on Group B. I got my eye on Group F because I don't think Palmeiras will have an easy task against teams like Independiente del Valle, winners of Sudamericana 2022, San Lorenzo, winners of Copa Libertadores, I believe 2016, and maybe a team like Liverpool, who people might underestimate, but who knows, maybe it's going to turn into Liverpool from England. So hopefully we get to see that. Hopefully Palmeiras doesn't advance. And then talking about our friend Bolivar News, he wasn't too happy that he is in the same group as Flamengo. I don't think it's going to be too much trouble for him and for his team, but Bolivar seems in good hands in my opinion. Just yesterday, they were losing 2-0 at halftime in their league, and they managed to turn things around, win 4-2. So yeah, I feel like Bolivar, after watching them play Atlético Paranaense last year season, they're not gonna have a difficult time playing teams like Palestino or Misionarios. So yeah, this is the Copa Libertadores. Today we'll have some big matches where Flamengo and Grêmio will be traveling against Misionarios and the Strongest respectively. Botafogo will be hosting Atlético Junior from Colombia. So expect them to win there. And then Palmeiras, they travel to Argentina to host or to play against San Lorenzo. And last season, if you remember when they played Agua Santa, they lost the first match in the Paulista final. They had to play Bolívar. So Abel Ferreira traveled with their B team. I hope he doesn't travel with the B team. I hope they travel with an A team so that the players are tired when they play Santos on Sunday, but I don't think that's going to be the case. Probably San Lorenzo will win that, and then Palmeiras still manages to make it through to the next stage of Libertadores. So what do you think is going to be the case there? And can Palmeiras have an easy job with their B squad against the Argentinians?
You know, I don't know too much about San Lorenzo these days. I actually don't. I'm kind of. I think Palmeiras. I think that group is a cakewalk for them, honestly. Independiente del Valle, yes, of course, they're dangerous. But I think San Lorenzo has a bigger name that their team leads on. But I don't watch a lot of the Argentines, so it wouldn't surprise me if they get two wins, but it also wouldn't surprise me if the Argentines win away from home, especially as we are obligated to mention that is the Pope's team. So you know, there might be a little bit of some extra push in those players. Also wanted to say Group G looks pretty spicy as well. Peñarol, Atlético Mineiro, and Rosario Central. Rosario are the reigning 2023 Copa de la Liga Profesional champions, and Peñarol are always a tough task, as we know. Atlético Mineiro, they're a great team, but we'll have to see how they do on the road with against those of those teams, and even Caracas, the Venezuelan team. I mean, that's no fun to play against either. So, yeah, it should be exciting. And you highlighted those fixtures. For me, I'm really curious. Botafogo are hosting Junior from Colombia. I think that's going to be an interesting game. See how Botafogo fare after they've gotten out of the Taça Rio with the trophy. See how they fare against international competition, and really set the tone for this year after such a dramatic year last year. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to.
And just to add, I don't know if you know, but Carlos Bacca, former AC Milan player, plays for Junior. So it's going to be a great match to see him and what he does in Brazil.
Yeah, it really will be. Forgot about him. All right, Copa Sudamericana. Also, the groups are out. And Corinthians, they can't get away from these guys. They are in a group with Argentinos Juniors once again. They were in there with them last year in the Copa Libertadores, as well as Paraguay and Nacional. But they still have a good chance to progress. In a group, they'll progress probably. Atlético Paranaense, Red Bull Bragantino, all looking like they will progress. Cruzeiro as well. Fortaleza getting a little bad luck, stuck with both the Boca Juniors and their group, but I think they will progress as well. Some interesting clubs here from across the continent. Maybe a little bit more, some of the more powerful teams from the less powerful countries might make a push here in this competition, which is always exciting to see. As far as the groups go, and maybe even the first round of fixtures, what are you looking at? What's catching your interest?
Well, you said it perfectly. The group of Corinthians seems pretty tough. Group F, Corinthians, Argentina Juniors, Racing of Uruguay, and Nacional. I don't think Corinthians is getting out of that group. And then again, Boca Juniors, Fortaleza, that's another big matchup of Brazilian and Argentinian coming up against each other. But overall, everything seems balanced. I know there's so many teams that we probably get to see for the first time in a long time, or maybe for the first time ever, like Sportivo Trinidense of Paraguay, or even a team like Deportivo Garcilaso of Peru. So many names, so many teams that maybe are performing for the first time, and maybe we get to see big matches that end 8-0, 7-0, which is fun at always in the South American continent. But yeah, this is going to be a great tournament. On Wednesday, we'll get to see Inter, Atletico Paranaense, and Corinthians play away from home. Cuiabá will host Lanús of Argentina. Rebel Bragantino will host Quimbayo of Chile. And on Friday, we'll have Universidad Católica against Cruzeiro. This is probably going to be a tough match for the Mineros. So we'll have to wait and see how those championships or continental championships go. And as always, maybe we can make our predictions, but it's always going to be difficult to say who wins it or who doesn't. It's so unpredictable in this continent. So hopefully the best wins it.
Yeah, I just want to circle back to, I mean, the game that I'm really curious to see is probably not one that many people have circled, but Cuiabá hosting Lanús. You said it, Lanús, of course, a very historic club from Argentina. Cuiabá, not traditionally known as a big team, but as the Brazilian league has grown in power, they've really kind of made themselves a home in the top division. You think about some of their players, Isidro Pita, of course, Davinson. What sort of antics is he going to be pulling? But it's a really exciting time for Cuiabá. I think they're an interesting side that doesn't get a lot of talk about them, certainly not in English. So I'm curious to see how they fare against Lanús. And I'll definitely be keeping my eye on that fixture. But hey, Henrik, with that, we did a great job. We did a great job on timing. That kind of wraps it up for this episode. We'll be back very soon, I think, probably, Henrik. The next episode we're gonna do is our big Brasileirão preview, or maybe one more episode before that. We've got it coming up so soon, and I'm so excited. But there's a lot of exciting football left yet ahead. We of course have the second legs of the finals basically all this coming weekend, and a lot to look forward to. So thanks again for listening to us, especially if you made it this far. We really do appreciate it. And you know what? 2024 is going to be the year of growth. So like, comment, subscribe, do whatever you have to do. We're going to grow this podcast. We're going to, I think, concentrate a little bit more on growing it this Brasileirão. So if you can interact with our social media or wherever you get your podcast, please do so. So thanks again so much, and we will see you all very soon.